It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price. All hail the Chief. That is our top story at noon. President Biden in our listening area today. He'll be in his hometown of Scranton trying to drum up support for his social welfare program. The visit comes as the president's popularity has reached a new low. A new Quinnipiac poll shows Mr. Biden with just a 37% job approval rating.
The American people are smart. They have common sense and they get it. They know that you get bad outcomes when you have bad policies.
Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan.
When you pay people not to work, you shouldn't be surprised when you can't find workers. When you defund the police, you shouldn't be surprised when crime goes up. This is what happens when you have stupid policies in place and the American people see it for what it is.
The president's popularity plunge, mainly due to a loss of support among independents. 60% of those voters say they disapprove of the job Mr. Biden is doing. The president scheduled to speak at the University of Scranton just after 5 p.m. today. The man responsible for one of the worst mass shootings in U.S. history is pleading guilty.
To count one of the indictment, murder in the first degree of victim Luke Hoyer. How do you wish to plead?
Guilty.
Nicholas Cruz pleading guilty to 17 deaths at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida on Valentine's Day 2018.
I accept your plea of guilty. I find that you are alert and intelligent, that you had made an informed decision with the advice of counsel.
Earlier today, Cruz apologized to the families of the victims.
I'm very sorry for what I did, and I have to live with it every day. And that if I were to get a second chance, I will do everything in my power to try to help others. And I am doing this for you, and I do not care if you do not believe me.
The judge will now hand things over to a jury that will determine whether Nicholas Cruz gets the death penalty or spends the rest of his life in prison. The White House has a plan in place for vaccinating children ages 5 to 11 against COVID. Here's response coordinator Jeff Zients.
You know, millions of parents have been waiting for COVID-19 vaccine for kids in this age group. And should the FDA and CDC authorize the vaccine, we will be ready to get shots in arms.
Correspondent Stephen Portnoy continues.
Plan still depends on formal approval from the CDC's advisory panel, which won't meet for two more weeks. But the White House says it's preparing now to distribute smaller needles and pediatric formulations of the vaccine. If approved for children ages 5 to 11, the Pfizer shot could be given to kids at pediatricians' offices, local pharmacies, and even local schools.
That's Stephen Portnoy reporting. The White House defending those midnight flights of unaccompanied minors from the southern border to Westchester County, New York. Here's White House spokeswoman Jen Psaki.
It's no surprise that kids can be seen traveling through states, not just New York. It's something that we're also working to unite children with their family members or vetted sponsors in other parts of the country.
The White House says it's just following the law, which requires the federal government to release minors within 20 days. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton, though, isn't buying it.
They're flying these migrants across the country in the dead of night is because they don't want to reveal the consequences of their open borders policy. If they thought it was a political winner for them, they'd be having these flights in the middle of the daytime.
Texas Senator Ted Cruz says he knows why these flights are being conducted under the cover of darkness.
There's a reason why you're seeing flights at 2:30 in the morning, at 4 o'clock in the morning, because they want to hide it, and they're counting on the corrupt corporate media to be complicit in covering it up.
Cruz has introduced legislation called Stop the Surge. His bill would create 13 new ports of entry in the U.S. for illegal immigrants to be sent to. Ted Cruz says the bill won't pass. And that's exactly his point.
Right now, those 2 million illegal aliens, most of them are coming to the state of Texas, my home state. I said, well, look, if it's okay, if you're fine with 2 million illegal immigrants, let's send them to where you like to hang out.
Senator Cruz says he's calling for illegal immigrants to be sent to liberal cities like Block Island, Rhode Island, Greenwich, Connecticut, and Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts. The Republican says the Biden administration would never allow that, but apparently it's okay for them to live in the state of Texas. The defining issue in the high-stakes Virginia gubernatorial contest is education. In less than 2 weeks, voters will decide between Democrat Terry McAuliffe and Republican Glenn Youngkin. These parents say they'll be voting for better schools in Old Dominion.
Grandchildren are not being well served. I'm concerned what goes on within the walls of the school.
Our kids went to Robinson High School and they had choice. They don't have that now. They're getting indoctrinated.
Of course we should be involved. Of course we should have a say in our kids' education.
It's a referendum on people's rights to determine their kids' education.
Glenn Youngkin says he's running for governor of Virginia to return rights to parents when it comes to educating their kids.
The time for closed-door conversation and silencing parents is over. Never again will radical school boards be able to hide.
The latest polls show the governor's race in Virginia neck and neck with 13 days to go. 17 states' attorneys general across the country have now condemned a Department of Justice probe into school board meetings in the U.S. That probe was launched by the Biden administration after several heated exchanges between parents and school officials. The administration went on to label those parents as domestic terrorists.
They don't have any actual examples of some type of terroristic threat. And really, this just looks like an effort of an administration that disagrees with these parents. And that, to me, is really scary. I have not seen anything like this from any administration since I've been alive.
Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton says the federal probe is something you'd expect to see in North Korea, not the U.S.
This is like something you might read about that I read about when I was in school in Germany or Russia. Here we have parents that just care about what's being taught in their schools. And they're being threatened with because they're angry or because they want to express their concern. I don't know. I'm shocked. I haven't seen anything like this ever.
U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland raising eyebrows all across the country earlier this month when he directed the FBI to investigate upset parents at school board meetings. A Washington Post op-ed piece telling Americans to stop ranting about the supply chain crisis in the U.S. and to, quote, lower their expectations.
Apparently, American greatness has been replaced by American mediocrity, and no one should accept that. And this piece absolutely would have been published if the same crisis occurred under the previous administration, under Trump, right? Rhetorical question.
Media critic Joe Concha.
Here you had White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, so it isn't just about this op-ed. This is the Biden White House also pushing the same point. She piously mocked the supply chain crisis yesterday. Quote, the tragedy of the treadmill that's delayed, unquote. No. This is about medical supplies, baby food, rising costs due to increased demand that impacts the poor middle class the most. And again, it's a White House that keeps failing on messaging. They look elitist and out of touch.
That Washington Post article tells Americans to stop ranting about empty store shelves and the nation's supply chain woes. Still to come this Wednesday, the president in Scranton, fatal police shooting in Syracuse, and smile rooms in Buffalo.
Well, good afternoon to all. Nice day across the area again today, but changes are ahead. Forecast details are coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
All right, Kevin Williams checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania Wednesday, October 20th. Once again, our top story at noon. The president in Pennsylvania, Mr. Biden, in Scranton, PA later today as he works to rally support for his social welfare program. The president's visit to his birthplace in the swing state of Pennsylvania comes just a week after First Lady Jill Biden was in nearby Allentown. A Republican who worked in the Trump White House is blasting the GOP in Pennsylvania over attempts to audit the 2020 vote in the Keystone State.
I think that sets a dangerous precedent for where we're heading as a country when you have elected officials directly lying about the reality of the election.
Olivia Troy putting up billboards all across the Commonwealth calling for the potential audit to be stopped. Governor Tom Wolf says that audit will never happen on his watch.
The election was back in November of 2020. We're still having this conversation.
Senate Republicans say the audit is not an attempt to overturn the election, but to give voters confidence in the system. A woman abducted last night in Ogden, New York, now safe and sound, while the man believed to be behind it is dead.
We don't see anybody dead as a result of an incident like this. We're very happy that the victim was able to come to us and get medical treatment.
Ogden Police Chief Chris Mears says 43-year-old Jessica Northrup was kidnapped by 52-year-old Paul Cullen last night in Spencerport. Mears says around 6 o'clock this morning, Northrup was able to escape and drive herself to safety.
A lot of deputies, a lot of police officers worked very hard throughout the night from several jurisdictions to make sure to try to find her to bring her home safely.
The victim being treated at a local hospital. Police say the man they found deceased earlier today committed suicide. Authorities in Onondaga County, New York, say a woman was shot and killed by police earlier today. That shooting taking place in Syracuse's Tip Hill neighborhood. The investigation has now been handed over to the state attorney general's office. The former elementary school principal accused of sexually abusing 9 young boys in Hilton, New York, now out of jail. Kirk Ashton posting $100,000 bail. Attorney Paul Harding representing some of Ashton's alleged victims.
Reality check that the person who has been, you know, alleged to have done these heinous things is now back in the community. And I think people are recognizing that they may even run into him at some point. And it sort of gives them a sense of disbelief.
The former principal worked for 17 years at Northwood Elementary in Hilton before his arrest last April on sex abuse charges. A Senate committee unanimously approving legislation yesterday in Harrisburg to make changes to the state's probation system. The bill would limit punishments due to technical violations of probation, such as minor traffic offenses. There's a new COVID vaccine mandate for all public employees in New York City.
Health Commissioner Dr. Dave Choksi will sign an order today to formalize the mandate, which will immediately apply to about 160,500 unvaccinated city workers.
That's Marla Diamond reporting. A federal mandate that TSA workers get the vaccine by November 22nd could impact your holiday travel this year.
People are traveling again, and there's certainly a pent-up demand to travel and families who've not seen each other for literally years.
Western New York Congressman Chris Jacobs says 40% of TSA workers across the country are not vaccinated, and he says losing them at the start of the holiday travel season would be devastating.
To impose this deadline Thanksgiving week, that is going to create a major transportation crisis.
Congressman Jacobs says he's calling on the Biden administration to push back the federal vaccine mandate. Pennsylvania Agriculture Secretary Russell Redding in Pittsburgh Tuesday promoting the state's $50 million investment in farming.
It's appropriate that we're in the fall and the harvest season because we're harvesting something that was planted some years ago. It was called the Pennsylvania Farm Bill and continues to be the only state-level farm bill in the nation.
Redding says the Farm Bill continues to feed families and fuel jobs in Pennsylvania. New York employers can no longer drug test employees for marijuana. Family Life's Tracy Lynn.
The state labor department says businesses must be able to articulate symptoms of impairment and provide observable evidence that a worker's job performance or overall workplace safety is negatively impacted by marijuana use. Business owners may still prohibit marijuana use during work hours and ban possession of the drug on company property. Recreational cannabis use in New York was legalized for those 21 and older back in March. Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
Smile rooms are coming to police precincts in Buffalo.
Our goal is to make these rooms as safe and as comfortable as possible for children to rest, play, or eat.
Buffalo Mayor Byron Brown says the rooms will serve as a safe haven for kids involved in a domestic dispute or anytime they need help from police.
Alter the way that we respond to situations where a child's parent has to be arrested. We want to make sure that we are not traumatizing children, that we're providing safe havens for children.
Officials say the rooms will help insulate kids all across Buffalo. Let's pause for sports. Your two-minute drill.
Yeah, let's start with the National League Championship Series. Game 3, Dodgers fans started leaving in the eighth inning with Los Angeles trailing 5-2. L.A. was 0-81 in that scenario. But that's why they play the game. Dodgers with two on. Cody Bellinger up the bat.
Sends one high and deep. Way back right center. Again!
Mookie Betts followed that up with an RBI double to put the Dodgers ahead for good 6-5. Atlanta still leads that series 2-1. In Boston, the Astros erupt for 7 runs in the 9th inning for a 9-2 win. That series is tied at 2 apiece. To the NBA season tip-off in Milwaukee, the defending NBA champion Bucks raised their second championship banner and beat up on the Brooklyn Nets 127-104. Nets head coach Steve Nash.
Yeah, it wasn't good, obviously. I thought we weren't as sharp as we needed to be. Probably weren't as physical as we needed to be. Weren't as organized as we needed to be.
Out west, the Golden State Warriors ruined the Lakers' debut 124-114. In Philadelphia, Ben Simmons thrown out of practice by 76er head coach Doc Rivers. Why?
That's none of your business. That's why practice is closed. And that's, honestly. So not being a jerk, but there's things you need to know, and then there's things you don't.
So does Coach Rivers still want Ben Simmons on the team?
Well, today, not, obviously. We told him to go home. But hopefully at some point, yeah, I do.
The 76ers have suspended Ben Simmons for the opening game tonight. On the ice, Sabres rallied against the Canucks to win 5-2 Buffalo, 3-0 on the year. New Jersey improved to 2-0 with their 4-2 win against the Seattle Kraken. The Penguins fall in a shootout against the Stars 2-1. Islanders pound Chicago 4-1. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delphiette.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Wednesday edition of the Noon Report, Southern Border Disorder. The latest on the crisis there, plus questioning your faith without losing it. We're going inside out. And at the end of today's broadcast, Loving It Lucy, 70 years later.
Generations of children have grown to love the lion, Aslan. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Over the next 5 years, every single one of C.S. Lewis's The Chronicles of Narnia will turn 70. 70 years in which generations of children have delighted in stepping through the door of the wardrobe to this magical land called Narnia, a world filled with magic, meaning, and a whole cast of characters that flowed from Lewis's prolific imagination. But at the end of the day, the overall appeal of The Chronicles of Narnia come back to one character, the great lion, Aslan, the one who calls the children into Narnia and then plays a key role in each of their adventures. Wouldn't be fair to call Aslan an allegory of Jesus, since Lewis disliked allegory and thought it was bad writing. And that's why Aslan often emphasizes that he really is a lion, not an illusion, not a symbol. He tells one character in The Horse and His Boy, "Touch me, smell me, here are my paws, here's my tail, these are my whiskers, I am a true beast." Through the great lion, he offered a glimpse of the Savior and King that he called myth become fact. Perhaps you've noticed that over the last several weeks, and into the next several weeks, we're going to be discussing our favorite moments from the Narnia series here on Breakpoint. My colleague Shane Morris brought up two scenes that illustrate Aslan's mission with a special bit of clarity. One takes place during the third chronicle. Shasta, the main character, has ridden through the night and is lost in the mountains. Having grown up in a foreign country and just returned to Narnia, he doesn't realize that he is royalty. But after running and riding for his life for so long, he's tired, he's discouraged, and concludes he must be the unluckiest boy alive. But suddenly, a great voice confronts him out of the darkness, asks to know his sorrows. Shasta is very frightened, but he doesn't know what else to do. So he relays how he and his companions have fled from their captors across the desert, how fear and danger have stalked them at every turn, and how they have met so many lions. But the voice replies, there was only one lion, but he was swift of foot. Aslan then reveals he was the one lion, and that his intervention at crucial moments saved the boy's life, as well as the lives of many others. What Shasta saw as bad luck was Aslan's providential paw guiding him through danger toward his rightful throne, even introducing him to his future wife. The second scene takes place at the end of the voyage of the Dawn Treader. Lucy, Edmund, and Eustace have come to the end of the world after months at sea. The rest of the characters have gone home, but the three children are now left alone. They are on a grassy shore. They're met by Aslan in the form of a lamb. And after revealing himself to them, he tells the children that it's now time to go home, and that for Edmund and for Lucy, there will be no more returning to Narnia. They don't take this news very well. "It isn't Narnia," cries Lucy. "It's you. We shan't meet you there. And how are we to live?
never meeting you. But you shall meet me, dear one. Only there I have another name, and you must learn to know me by that name, so that by knowing me here for a little, you may know me better there. Of course, Aslan is speaking as much to all of us as he is to Lucy, like Jesus revealing himself to his disciples at the breaking of bread or on the beach after his resurrection. And when Aslan reveals his role in Shasta's story, we're reminded of Jesus on the road to Emmaus, unfolding to these confused and lost and scared disciples everything they needed to know. It's no wonder that, like those disciples, so many who have met Aslan in the Chronicles of Narnia have felt within their own hearts a burning. And 70 years on now, it's clear that C.S. Lewis's story deserve all of the status that they have as classics, and even more, because they're filled with spiritual treasures for both young and old. And the lion's share of the credit for this goes to Aslan, because in him we meet a character that's just too good to be a story. And like Lucy, we long to know him by his true name, not in spite of the mane and the tail, but maybe because of them. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
20 minutes past the hour. Let's head outside. Kevin Williams.
Well, very good afternoon to all. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Skies range from sunny to partly cloudy. A brief shower in some parts of central New York or areas near Lake Ontario cannot be ruled out. Most of us are high and dry and lovely. High temperatures nearing 70. For tonight, partly moonlit. Could be a late night shower near Lake Erie. Mild. Low temperatures mid-40s to the mid-50s. For tomorrow, variable cloudiness. A couple of scattered showers. That's about all. High temperatures near 70. Showers will be a little more numerous tomorrow night. Friday, clouds some sun with a shower with highs in the 50s and low 60s.
All right, Kevin Williams, if you're just joining us here, some of the stories we're following for you today, Wednesday, October 20th. The man who pleaded guilty to 17 counts of first-degree murder in the 2018 mass shooting at a Florida high school apologized to the families of his victims today.
I am very sorry for what I did, and I have to live with it every day.
Nicholas Cruz spoke in court this morning after pleading guilty in the Parkland school massacre. All across the country, police officers are resigning or getting fired for refusing to get the COVID-19 vaccine. Robert LeMay quit his job as a Washington State Trooper last weekend because of the mandate. He says a lot of officers are stepping down, even after getting the shot.
The troopers that actually left today, the final number we got was 74 troopers. Well, okay. When I actually talk to the people, there's a lot more that just retired. We have guys that just flat quit before they had to be fired. So there's another number. And then the hundreds of people that have been vaccinated just lost faith in this state and in the Washington State Patrol. So this goes on and on and on. It's ridiculous.
In New York City, Mayor Bill de Blasio announcing a vaccine mandate today for all municipal workers in the Big Apple. Firefighters and police officers have till November 1st to get their first shot or risk being fired. The White House defending its decision to fly unaccompanied minors from the southern border in Texas to Westchester County, New York, in the dead of night.
The whole operation was literally meant to be under the cover of darkness, so the public didn't know anything about this. But we literally have our own government right now that is creating a sanctuary nation.
Former Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino.
There certainly is no fear of recriminations. There certainly is no worries whatsoever among those coming into the country because they know that their new government will take care of them, and they certainly are.
Border officials, meantime, say 52 migrants recently stopped in Panama have ties to Al-Qaeda.
We just don't know what's coming across the border, and that is scary, and it needs to be a point of emphasis for this administration in order to protect the American public.
Brandon Judd is president of the National Border Patrol Council. He says 100,000 migrants are now heading to the U.S. southern border from Panama. Nancy Pelosi's hand-picked panel investigating the January 6th riots at the U.S. Capitol voting unanimously yesterday to hold former White House advisor Steve Bannon in contempt for ignoring a subpoena to testify.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Mississippi Democrat Benny Thompson says he hopes yesterday's vote will serve as a deterrent.
Left unaddressed, this defiance may encourage others to follow Mr. Bannon down the same path.
Steve Bannon's legal team says he's protected by executive privilege. The full House scheduled to vote tomorrow. The Biden administration unveiling plans to vaccinate children ages 5 to 11. COVID coordinator Jeff Zients says the government will be ready to get Pfizer shots in arms after expected final approval from the FDA and the CDC. We are coming up on 25 minutes past the hour. Next at noon, Inside Out with Martha Monicus Foster. Today, Martha sits down with author and pastor A.J. Swoboda to talk about how we can question our faith without losing it.
AJ, if our spouse or child or friend has just told us that they are deconstructing their faith, what do they mean and what are they doing?
Yeah, well, this is obviously a really big topic.
Right.
But basically, what we're talking about when we're talking about deconstruction is we are talking about the opposite of construction, right? If you're building a building, you know, you start with this foundation and then you go from there, and it's this process of building something. Well, for a lot of people, that's, you know, a process that they're going through. But for a lot of other people, the process of deconstruction is beginning to question some of the belief structures that they have built for themselves. And it is a very big conversation in the church right now. And I think, to be honest with you, some deconstruction is absolutely necessary and healthy, and some of it is also very dark and demonic. So it's a mixed bag. But deconstruction, in essence, means bringing down or questioning beliefs that we have constructed.
So, AJ, people are going to come with a lot of reasons, but what are the primary reasons people are taking either a fine-tooth comb or maybe a hatchet to their faith?
Yeah, there's a couple right now that are really, I think, really important at our moment in history. Mm-hmm. I think number one is a lot of young people who have been handed the faith are beginning to recognize that some of the elements of the faith that they were handed probably don't reflect Jesus and the Bible. And as a result of that, question the traditions that have been handed down to them. And I think this is what I mean when I say a good side for deconstruction, because, for example, a lot of young people that were handed the gospel in some particular community also feel like they were handed really, really, really harmful and dangerous understandings of, you know, their understanding of women or their understanding of power or their understanding of politics or whatnot. And they need to question those things and bring it back to the Bible. So I think a great example would be, you know, feeling like they'd been handed false ideas of God. But I think another side is that a lot of deconstruction is done now in the name of doing away with beliefs that get in the way of giving us what we want. And so for a lot of people, they're deconstructing the Christian faith, not because they want to follow Jesus, but because really they want to sleep with who they want to sleep with.
Mm-hmm.
And to get out of the way those beliefs that get in the way is a really helpful way to get to that place. So there's a lot of reasons. And I, again, back to my first point, I think there's a lot of reasons that are very good for people to deconstruct, but there are also some very nefarious and dark reasons why we deconstruct.
I was sorting through all kinds of things on the internet to try and find out more about deconstruction. Yeah, I would imagine if somebody else is searching that, there are a lot of ways they could become derailed. Some cultural forces certainly do not support a healthy analysis of the faith. Are we in agreement on that?
100%. Yeah.
Okay.
You could find, Martha, 100 websites, podcasts, books right now that would be under the guise of deconstruction, but their real motivation is to help people undo the faith. No, no question. Which is why I say in my book, After Doubt, one of the probably the most dangerous places to go if you're in the midst of deconstruction is the internet.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably one of the most dangerous places to go.
But you do say in your book, to those who are deconstructing, that there's endless hope. So what would you say to the person who's deconstructing about that hope? And what do you say is the best way for those of us who love someone who's come to us with that news, that they are in the process of pulling things apart? How can we be the best friend, the best kind of family member to somebody going through this?
Well, my immediate gut level response is to go to the story of Thomas in John's gospel, where Jesus appears first to the other disciples, but not to Thomas. Thomas wasn't there. And then Thomas has a hard time believing that Jesus had actually appeared.
Right.
And before Thomas has his eye-opening experience where he does see Jesus's resurrected body, there's two things there that strike me that I think I'd commend to you and your audience.
Okay.
The first is that the disciples who were believing in the resurrection made room in their midst for the doubter.
Mm.
You're talking about parents, you're talking about friends.
Mm-hmm.
If we got people that are walking through this stuff,
I think the most important thing we can do is create space for people that are asking really big questions and don't marginalize or ostracize or shame people that are in the midst of these experiences. People can download podcasts, but they can't download friends. Mm. And the truth is, we need people who make space for others in the midst of their struggles. But I want to say to the person who's going through the deconstruction, keep drawing yourself back to the community, the resurrection community, before you experience the resurrection, and keep coming back. I'm struck that Thomas kept showing up despite the fact he was struggling to believe. And all of us are going to go through bouts and experiences of having a hard time believing. Keep showing up. And we all have the promise of hope that Christ will reveal himself fully to each of us. But we play a role of not giving up. Keep coming back. There's hope.
Thank you, guys. That is author and pastor A.J. Swoboda.
Well, very good afternoon to all. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Skies range from sunny to partly cloudy. A brief shower in some parts of central New York or areas near Lake Ontario cannot be ruled out. Most of us are high and dry and lovely. High temperatures nearing 70. For tonight, partly moonlit. It could be a late night shower near Lake Erie. Mild. Low temperatures mid-40s to the mid-50s. For tomorrow, variable cloudiness. A couple of scattered showers. That's about all. High temperatures near 70. Showers will be a little more numerous tomorrow night. Friday, clouds, some sun with a shower with highs in the 50s and low 60s.
All right, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. Finally at noon, 70 years later, a lot of us still love Lucy. Family Life's Mark Webster.
It was October 1951 when episode one of I Love Lucy flickered to life on black and white TV screens across the land. When color TV arrived, America got its first true look at the Jamestown, New York native who became America's favorite redhead. Jamestown's National Comedy Center and the Lucille Ball Desi Arnaz Museum are honoring her legacy with episode screenings, enhanced Lucy Desi exhibits, and new interactive experiences for fans of the beloved TV series. Executive Director Journey Gunderson says I Love Lucy has stood the test of time and essentially invented television comedy as we know it today. Mark Webster, Family Life News.
Thank you, Mark. That's the world we live in this Wednesday. As always, thanks for coming along. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.